We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll meet Molly Foster. She's an author of a new Alaska hiking guide. You can also learn how to join hundreds of costumed people as they run through the streets of Juno in the middle of the night. And the Grateful Dogs will be here to highlight their annual Sandy Beach cleanup. There's interviews, National Native News, Bird Note music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Taking a look at weather, partly sunny today with a high near 57. Tonight, the rain is back, showers likely. Tomorrow, showers likely mainly before 7 a.m. Chance of precipitation is 60%, and the rain is back again on Friday. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Wisconsin Supreme Court this week backed the interests of the Ho-Chunk Nation against a concrete company that wants to dig up a group of burial mounds. Courthouse News Service reports the justices deadlocked 3-3 on Tuesday, automatically upholding a lower court's ruling that the company Wingra Ready Mix can't excavate 7 effigy mounds in a quarry in southern Wisconsin. Wingra has been trying since 2010 to remove the mound's protected status, arguing there's no evidence they contain human remains. Its petitions were repeatedly rejected by the state historical society and courts. The state high court's ruling reaffirms that the Ho-Chunk have an interest in all Native American burial sites in southern Wisconsin because the whole region is the tribe's traditional homeland. Opponents of the Enbridge pipeline replacement plan for northern Minnesota face continued hurdles despite the governor's veto of a fast-track provision for the project this week. Governor Mark Dayton vetoed a bill that would bypass a decision by the State Public Utilities Commission. Dayton said the bill was, quote, ill-considered, politically motivated pandering to the pipeline's proponents. Still, a decision by the commission is pending at their meeting next month on the pipeline route. An administrative law judge recommended earlier this month the new pipeline adhere to the path of the existing pipeline it's slated to replace. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe criticized that decision, telling Minnesota Public Radio it's the worst of all route alternatives because it disregards the band's sovereignty and also threatens the most productive wild rice beds, crossing some 40 miles of the Leech Lake Reservation. In predominantly Republican Idaho, candidate for governor Paulette Jordan insists she has a good chance in the race. Jordan, a member of the Coeur d'Alene tribe, won the Democratic primary, making her the first Native American to do so. Steve Jackson reports.
Democrat Paulette Jordan surprised many during the recent Idaho primary election when she defeated an establishment Democrat to become the gubernatorial candidate. The state representative has been elected twice to the House, but recently stepped down from her seat to campaign for governor of Idaho. Jordan says despite the perception that Idaho is a solid Republican state, she feels she has a good chance of being elected. She says as a lifelong resident of rural Idaho, she believes her campaign will resonate with Idaho voters.
You know, these are people who want freedom. They want to be left alone. We just want to be able to live our life, raise our children, ensure that we have access to health care. We want to make sure that no one's polluting our water. We want to make sure that we have lands that we can hand off to our children so that they can inherit the same land and be, you know, great stewards along with the same legacy that we had before us. So I think this is not a Democrat or a Republican issue. This is an Idaho issue.
Among her priorities, ensuring that more people have access to health care, which she believes can be done if lawmakers finally take the step to expand Medicaid in the state. She also believes education should be a top priority and thinks teachers should be paid competitive salaries compared to adjacent states. Jordan will face Republican Lieutenant Governor Brad Little in the general election. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Tribes and U.S. lawmakers are pushing to permanently protect a buffer zone around Chaco Canyon in New Mexico from natural resource development. New Mexico Democratic Senators Martin Heinrich and Tom Udall introduced legislation Tuesday to prevent future oil and gas leasing and mineral development by the federal government within a 10-mile radius of the UNESCO World Heritage Site. In a press conference, Zuni Pueblo Governor Val Pantea said preserving the greater Chaco area is a priority for the 20 nations of the All Pueblo Council of Governors.
By preserving and protecting these sites, we send a strong message about the importance of culture and history in America.
Navajo Nation President Russell Begay also expressed support. For National Native News, I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by First Tribal Lending, NMLS 15009, the nation's most experienced Section 184 lending team. Info for home loans on and off the reservation available at onetribal.com. That's the numeral onetribal.com. Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today is Molly Foster. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah, Molly, where are you calling from today?
I'm actually calling from Denali, just outside the national park. We have a cabin a few miles south of there.
Well, that's exciting. How's the mountain look today?
I don't know that we can really see the mountain today, but, the weather moves through here pretty quick, so it's always a really beautiful day in the area. Yeah.
Well, you're on the show today to talk about a new Alaska hiking guide called Hiking Alaska, a guide to Alaska's greatest hiking adventures. But before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience as a hiker in Alaska?
Yeah, so I've been in Alaska about 10 years and kind of bouncing between Denali and the Anchorage area primarily. And I've always been a pretty avid hiker and just into the outdoors, really love pack rafting and biking and skiing, and have also just worked in the publishing industry for many years as well. And so through that work in the publishing industry, had an opportunity to revise this wonderful guidebook and totally jumped at the chance. So, yeah, it's been a great experience.
Now, this is the third edition of this guide. Did you also write the first?
No, so I didn't write the first. A man named Dean Littlepage did. He's now retired, and so they hired me to basically update the format from that second edition, which had a lot of great information, great foundation, and I basically took it. It had been 10 years since the book had been printed, so I took all that information and updated the trails. About 20%, 25% of the book from the second to third edition trail-wise is all updated, you know, because you get trails that become eroded over time if they're not maintained, or just don't have great signage, or other things that means that it shouldn't be in the current edition. So, and also new trails that should be highlighted. So I took all of that into account, and basically, this book is, in my opinion, the 100 best designated maintained hiking trails all around Alaska. It's from Ketchikan all the way up to Fairbanks and pretty much everywhere in between. So it covers a wide area and just hits the high points for each one of those trails.
What was the motivation for creating this guide? How's it different from the other ones that are out there?
It's the only one that I'm aware of that covers the whole state. So, you know, you have a lot of great trail guides that are, say, Juneau specific, or, you know, around Anchorage, like Chugach specific, or the interior, et cetera. And this book is basically a reference for all around the state. So I've gotten some feedback from readers, because it's been out for about a year, that it's great for their travels to other parts of the state. Like, I was just in Juneau earlier in May, and folks said, oh, this is great. I'm headed to Cordova next weekend, and, you know, there's Cordova trails in there. Or, oh, yeah, I'm going to Denali this summer, and I've never been, and this will be great for my drive up to Denali from the Anchorage area. So it's hopefully, you know, the one guide that can hit, like I said, kind of some of the high points with some of the best trails and just a wide variety as well, from more meandering, shorter trails to all the way up to, like, backpacking ridge traverses.
That kind of answers my next question, which is, what kinds of trails are in this book? Is it day trips? Is it backpacking trips? Is it a mix?
Yeah, it's totally a mix. And I took that into account as well. I really wanted this book to be for everyone. I mean, from families with little kids to really active folks to, you know, folks that maybe have hiked a lot in their day and are, you know, just want to go for a nice stroll or something. And so there is a wide variety in the book. And even for Juno, so there are trails that I'd say are more of a stroll, like a Perseverance Trail, for example. Like you could go just out, right up from downtown and go hike there. And then other trails are a bit more on the strenuous side, something like West Glacier, where you can kind of use that maintained trail and then potentially kind of go off trail, you know, past the maintained area and go toward the glacier, depending on your experience level, of course. But just to cover that variety for folks.
You said the section on Juno trails takes up a good percentage of the book. Would you tell the good people how you came to explore those trails and write about them?
Yeah, so this book is 100 trails around the state, and 10% of the book is actually Juno, because, as you all know, Juno has a wonderful and an extensive trail network. I was really impressed. I came to Juno when I was just there, as I mentioned earlier this month. But before, when I was working on the book, a photographer friend and I flew down there, and we had a short amount of time. We had 5 days, including our travel days, and 10 hiking trails to cover, and we totally, literally hit the ground running. We landed, and we're hiking that afternoon, one trail that day, the next day, you know, sometimes two, sometimes even a third trail in one of those days, just so that I would be able to accurately write about it, so we would have photos. My friend Willie and I, we actually split up at some points because some of these trails are so great and extensive to where I'm like, I'll go this junction, you go that junction, and we'll shoot photos. And I wanted everything to be as current and accurate as possible. So I left Juno exhausted. it was really great. But the recent trip earlier this month, people were like, oh, yeah, did you eat at this restaurant or, you know, this or that in town? And I said, no, I pretty much only hike trails and left.
Wow.
But it was great. And that's been one of the wonderful challenges for this book too. Obviously it's 100 trails, it's all over the state, but it's given me a great excuse in a way to, oh, I need to go, you know, fly down to different parts of the state and explore just so I can get my feet on the ground. But yeah, pretty big challenge in terms of for me with this edition, a short amount of time to be able to have to explore, you know, while I have this assignment. So presumably next time, if there's a fourth edition, I will have that 10 years to explore. It would be great.
When there's a fourth edition.
Yeah.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Molly Foster. She's the author of the book Hiking Alaska, a Guide to Alaska's Greatest Hiking Adventures, 100 Trails. Molly, would you tell us which Juno trails you included in the book, or do we have to buy the guide to find out?
No, you don't have to buy the guide. And, you know, I dropped some books off at a couple of shops that we'll talk about, I think, at the end here. But, yeah, it includes the 10 trails, Perseverance Trail, Mount Juno, Granite Creek, Dan Moeller, East Glacier, Nugget Creek right there by the Visitor Center, West Glacier on the other side of the lake, Montana Creek and Windfall Lake, which is a great connecting trail, Ocknew Trail, the Herbert Glacier Trail, that one, next time I would bring a bike, but
yeah.
It was great. Amalga Trail, and that one was definitely more on the strenuous, hadn't been maintained recently, but hopefully in the next 10 years will be. And then Point Bridget, which we went there just a few weeks ago, and it was the first time I've ever been hiking and just been looking right at a humpback. That was pretty darn cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really amazing, amazing trail and area right there.
All great choices, just based on my own personal experience. I believe I've been on every one of those except for the Amalga Trail. So I look forward to reading about them in your guide. Speaking of the trails that are more statewide, were there any, like, hidden gems that you think people should try to find and hike?
You know, hidden gems. It's a funny question because the idea with this book that, you know, they're maintained trails. They're not local secrets or anything like
right,
that. Because
right.
I want the thing with this book is I want it to be accessible for folks that are first-time visitors to Alaska to pick up this book, be able to understand, you know, how to get to the trailhead and what's involved, as well as Alaskans who maybe know the trails really well. I would say one of my favorites, you know, I really personally love traverses, quite a bit. And so, you know, down in southeast Chilkoot, of course, is a great one. Or closer to where I am right now, the Kasugi Ridge Trail is a great one. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I've been on both of those trails.
Great, yeah. And there are a handful up north of Fairbanks, too, that are wonderful. So those, personally, I really like because you can kind of make it what you want. But, yeah, with this book, the idea is that there's the directions, there's the elevation profile, description. You know, it kind of hits up all the high points for you to know what's involved. There's even, with the latest update, it's all color, and so color topo maps, which are super helpful, and then a ton more photos. Being a photographer, I took that challenge seriously, and we have over 170 photos in this book, so it is thick. It is a great reference book.
Yeah, that's a great segue into my next question, too, which is what else does it contain besides trail information? And you said photos and maps. Do you also discuss things like gear and safety?
Yes, in the beginning of the book. So there's a pretty extensive introduction, just again, for folks that are first-time visitors to Alaska, like what about wildlife and bears and what if I get lost and things like that. So it's called Before You Hit the Trail. There's a whole section on that. But then within each of the trail descriptions, I tried to make it as condensed as possible with just the mileage, you know, how to find the trailhead directions, a description, a paragraph, or sometimes a couple paragraphs, and then an elevation profile. And then at the end, there's just miles and directions, which just as you're hiking, you could reference, okay, we're at this bridge and we're at mile one. All right, another half mile is where that viewpoint that Molly talked about, or et cetera. And then a lot of the trails have photos as well, color photos. So that's helpful. I've heard feedback from readers that's been really helpful both to just enjoy, but also to, you know, inspire them for getting out to these trails.
What's your favorite must-have item to protect yourself from the weather when you're hiking in Alaska?
I think just a good rain jacket is a solid one, which I have to admit, sometimes I've worn two rain jackets because it's been so wet.
Yeah.
Potentially when I was in Southeast.
I'm not surprised. I never thought of wearing two rain jackets, though. That's actually a really good idea.
Well, I don't know if it's a good idea or if it's just old gear. And then, like, you know, those rain jackets, I feel like, only have a lifespan of a year or two. So having that other one on top, I'm thinking of one particular experience kind of in the Kenai Fjords area, actually. But yeah, I would say a rain jacket. Rain pants are always nice, too.
And what do you eat on the trail?
Oh, just bars and snacks and things. I wouldn't say it's any... I don't have any secrets or anything for endurance. Really just snacking often is my personal take.
All right. So where can we get a hold of Hiking Alaska?
Yeah, great question. So a variety of ways. I'm selling them on my website, which is mollyfostermedia.com. It's Molly with an IE, and you'll find it on there. And then I dropped off some books at Foggy Mountain. There's a great outdoor gear shop right downtown, and as well as Hearthside Books, which is where I had my first Friday book signing earlier this month.
One last question before we wrap up. What was the craziest thing you saw on a Juneau trail?
I would have to say that humpback the other day was pretty wild. I had to stop for a minute and think, man, have I ever been, you know, usually when you see a whale, you're in a boat. And so like, man, this trail is amazing. That it was not very difficult, pretty flat, straight away, and just straight from the car to the humpback by feet. It was pretty darn cool. Well, yeah.
It's a favorite of mine as well. Molly Foster, thanks for joining us today, author of Hiking Alaska, Guide to Alaska's Greatest Hiking Adventures, available in your local bookstores. And thanks for joining us today, Molly.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just hope everyone gets out there this summer and look forward to hearing from folks what they think of the book and, yeah, favorite trails and all that. So,
well, I can't wait to check it out. Thanks for doing all the research. Sounds like you're kind of living the dream.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
This is Bird Note. In Denver, Chris Englert is a leader of something called a walking cooperative. Walk to Connect encourages people to get outdoors, and Chris has walked every single neighborhood in Denver. Today, Chris's daughter, Asher Milliken, is leading her own walk for the first time.
As a mother, you have pride in your children all the time. God, I'm about to cry. But Asher, my daughter, and I went to see the Inconvenient sequel, the second movie after The Inconvenient Truth.
Asher just graduated from a climate reality program started by Vice President Al Gore. She came home inspired to share the story of climate change in her own community. We're at the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge. It's one day before Asher's 15th birthday. Asher starts out talking about how climate change is altering the prairie that we're on now.
Changing plant flowering times, this can mess up the ecosystem and make animals migrate north, which will then mess up the ecosystem further.
Asher leads us out into the refuge.
Are you good? Okay, let's go.
The walking group is a mix of young and old, longtime birders and first-time birders. We're looking at bark beetle devastation and dry grass that could cause wildfires. Asher says the arsenal is not the greatest evidence of climate change in the world, but it's her backyard, and that's where she's going to start.
You know, it's this little island of natural and this whole, you know, world of industrial. Like, you don't have to look very far to see how climate change is affecting your community.
Learn more about what Asher and her friends are discovering at birdnote.org. I'm Meredith Turk.
The 34th annual Only Fools Run at Midnight is back on June 23rd.
Run for public radio!
Get your early bird tickets today. Why should you register now?
Early bird registration gets you the best ticket price, free custom design swag, and glow gear for running the race.
So don't wait. Get your tickets today at kto.org/foolsrun.
This event generously sponsored by Holland America Line and Princess Cruises, True North Federal Credit Union, and Rainforest Pediatric Care.
Well, speaking of Only Fools Run at Midnight, this is a Juno afternoon. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney, and in the studio with me now are my next guests, Sarah Schaefer and Tana Peters, both part of the KTOO family.
Yay.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So you guys are here to talk about Only Fools Run at Midnight, and I was just saying how much I love the fun PSAs you've both put together for this event.
Yay!
All right, so Only Fools Run at Midnight is our annual solstice-ish fun run. Why don't you tell the good people all about what we got going on this year?
Well, we've got a bunch of new changes, so we're pretty excited. And the first thing is, it's Only Fools Run at Midnight. Run for public radio.
Oh, run for public radio. trying to
cue Sarah.
I'm just like sitting here with my coffee.
So KTOO has done a little tiny bit of rebranding. Not really, but we just want to make sure that everybody knows that it's a big fundraiser for us. And so if you come on down to the race, you will be giving to KTOO, and we would be really excited if you would. And also, we have lots of fun ways during the race to give back to you.
How many glow sticks is this going to involve?
I have ordered multiple hundreds. I think there's like 500 at least.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, lots of glow sticks.
And fun T-shirts. We're still looking for volunteers. Obviously, this is an event where we are reliant on volunteers helping us man the route so it's visible and safe for everybody. JPD is super helpful in helping us out and is also going to be there, of course, and is giving an orientation for volunteers. All volunteers are getting a T-shirt, an event staff T-shirt that only volunteers get. So if you are interested, you can just contact us here at KTOO. And we'd love to have you on board.
Let's talk a little bit more about the T-shirt. I want to sell it a little bit because I ordered mine. And I think the thing I'm most excited about is it's like a jersey style, right? So you can like work out in it.
Yeah, it's like bright neon. I know everybody loves neon, super hip right now. And
it's safe if you're running outside.
And it has the stylings of the posters. If you have seen the designs for the event, it's got all that going on, and it's an event staff tee, so only event staff will get this T-shirt. Another fun thing, we really are looking for some folks to fill out as course guides and course DJs. So we're pretty excited about that. And if you want to find out more about how you can become a course DJ, then email me at tana@ktoo.org because I will definitely put you in the list.
T-A-N-N-A.
Yep.
And what does being a course DJ entail?
Well, I feel like I should entice them by making them call me.
All right. You have to call Tana to find out. And you guys are going to be coming on this show about once a week all the way up until the race to kind of get people excited and fill in all the details and just keep it fresh in everybody's mind.
Yeah.
You want everybody to come out. But there's some big changes this year, so maybe we should hit on some of those right now.
Well, first of all, we changed the route. Again, shout out to JPD. They helped us a lot with, like, brainstorming on how we can make this safer. In past years, we've encountered that the weather wasn't as great, and it was actually darker than we anticipated. So, first of all, we changed the start time to 11 o'clock.
That's a big one. That's 11
a big
p.m.
One.
Are you guys all listening? So, the idea is you start the race at 11 p.m. Don't be the fool cut out after midnight. Got it?
And I support this.
Right. And we're going to start from the Jack just because we want to have it like more like an outside-inside event. And we are going to incorporate, thank you to CBJ Parks and Rec, the Seawalk, the portion
Yay.
That goes to the whale, because we think it's really quite a showcase event for us, and it's also going to be lovely to incorporate that new part of the city a little bit more.
Yeah.
You've seen the whale. It's now, it has some
water
lighting.
And lights.
And if we can showcase that, we're not sure if it's going to be ready for
well,
us.
Well, we get to run by it at the very least, and so you'll be able to see it. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Basically, I was like, let's incorporate some of the pretty waterfront landscape
mm-hmm.
that we can, and then we also will whip back and run through parts of town that are yeah. classically run, too. So we get both ends of the spectrum there. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah. So we're excited about that. We'll also have a Chia Garden. So
Yay.
That will open as soon as the race starts. That'll open for the people who want to wait for and cheer people and then come back. Or everyone that's basically coming back from the race can then join us in the Chia Garden.
Is that beer and wine?
It is.
Yeah. So the Chia Garden is being... is going to have beer, and bubbly is what we're billing it as, but primarily it's beer. What's really exciting is Devil's Club Brewing Co. is going to work with us on the Cheer Garden, which is in essence a beer garden in which you get to cheer. So it's not that complicated. People are like, what is a cheer garden? I'm like, well, a cheering beer garden.
And of course,
go ahead, Sarah.
Of course, all proceeds of this event go to KTO. I think people are always thinking about, oh, KTO, you have members. And yes, we're publicly funded by all of our lovely members out there. Shout out to you. And of course, our underwriters that support us greatly. But the third part of our funding are events. And this is one of our key feature main events of the year. So come out and support public radio by running for public radio.
Yeah.
Well, what else do you guys want to highlight while you're here?
Well,
besides
all the fun changes, we also have fun swag you can have for free. If you sign up and you're one of the early bird registrants, adult registrants, on our website, you can get free swag, glow gear, and every adult gets one brew from Devil's Club Brewing Co. included in the ticket price. So it's so fun. You can go run, and you can come back and cheer in that garden, and you don't even have to pay for the first one.
While looking really good in your hat that is also
yeah.
neon.
Yeah.
You get
There's
a hat.
A lot of neon.
Yeah, you, get,
yeah,
a
you
hat.
Get a hat.
But
mm-hmm.
only the first few that register, right?
Yeah, the early bird registrant. So we would love for you to hop on the website, ktoo.org/FoolsRun. Let me say it again, ktoo.org/FoolsRun. And if you get your tickets today, you will get in that early bird registration and you will get your free swag and you will get all the fun pieces of it. And we really encourage people to sign up ahead of time so that we're not all caught in a crazy registration pile up at the event.
And
please,
you can
please,
register
please.
As teams. And, you know, we still have our costume contest.
Ah, yes. But that was going to be my next question. My second favorite part after the glow sticks is the costume. So,
yes.
And now this year there's a runway. So mm-hmm. Everybody gets to show off their costume right before they run in it.
Yes, absolutely. And Annie B will be back as the MC, so that's super awesome. We love her. KTO, KXLL favorite, and KTO. She's around here all the time doing amazing work. And And we'll have some fun guest judges who will be doing some fun judging. And then at midnight, we will have an award ceremony where the folks who won from the costume contest and other prizes throughout the night will be awarded. So we got a lot going on.
Yeah. So Only Fools Run at Midnight. And what is, and that's on June 22nd?
June 23rd.
Sorry, how
Saturday
did I get
night.
That
wrong? That's okay.
June 23rd, there's a new course. There's a new start time. There's a cheer garden. There's music all along the way. There's the costume runway. And there's prizes. Do you guys want to say anything about the prizes?
We are.
They're awesome.
Yeah, we're gathering up a bunch of really great prizes. Like, the locals are coming out and helping us, all the businesses. So we've got, like, cool swag. We've got cool trips you can go on. And you can win it both as winning costume contests, but you can also just win it by attending the event. So
we got all
the things.
We have door prizes, basically.
Excellent. So you don't have to win the race to win the prize.
You don't have to win. No.
It's actually not a timed race.
Yeah, it's a fun run.
It's a fun run.
Yeah, there will be, like, a giant timer, but that's just for fun, if that makes any sense.
All right. Well, Tana and Sarah, both on the development team here at KTOO Public Media, thank you so much for organizing this race, Only Fools Run at Midnight. It's a favorite of locals and my friends and all of
Yay.
Us. So anything else you guys want to add?
Rain or shine, come out and support
yes.
public radio by running and fun running and have a cheer with us.
Yeah, and head on over to ktoo.org/foolsrun to get your tickets or email me if you want to be a volunteer at tanna@ktoo.org.
Great. And we'll get some more updates from both of you next week, I hope.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Shelley. We'll be right back.
KTOO is supported by Landscape Alaska, specializing in low maintenance and sustainable landscape design and edible garden plants. Quotes and information at landscapealaska.com.
Hi, this is Lauren with Juneau Parks and Recreation. Splash into summer with Juneau Pools. Take advantage of our new $129 summer swim pass for all ages, providing admission for lap and open swims, tot time, channel walking, water fitness classes, and more. Valid May 1st through October 1st. Remember, head over to Augustus Brown during Diamond Park's annual closure, May 6th through 22nd, and enjoy Friday night moonlight swim. Visit us at junopools.org and like us on Facebook.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's about 20 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my last guest today is Deborah Baer. Last but not least, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And you're here representing Grateful Dogs in Juno. Who are Grateful Dogs, and what's their role here?
Great. And thank you so much for inviting us. Grateful Dogs is a nonprofit in Juneau, Alaska, and its goal is for advocacy, education, and community service for the dog community. We've been in existence for over 10 years, and we do a lot of public service, and we wanted to invite everybody to the Save the Feet glass pickup campaign.
And what is Save the Feet?
Save the Feet will be held this Sunday, May 27th, from 10 to 12 at Sandy Beach. Please meet us at the parking lot, and we'll provide all the equipment that you need to help pick up glass on Sandy Beach. If you walk there with your dog or your family, you will sometimes see glass, and we will ask everybody to pick it up, and then we'll have containers, and the glass will get recycled, or there are even some people who collect it and make jewelry out of it or make furniture, put it in pieces of furniture. So it's all repurposed, and we really want to encourage everybody to attend.
What kind of glass are you mainly picking up year after year?
Surprisingly, it's still a lot of glass bottles, even though there are signs around Sandy Beach that glass bottles are not acceptable. And I must say there's wonderful canned beverages out there these days, so we really encourage people to go to cans if you can. But we're finding a lot of bottoms and tops of glass bottles. And I brought a couple here, and I'll describe them to your audience. When they break in half, they get very sharp at the top of them. And if they get caught in a log or frozen in the wintertime in Sandy Beach, they're very dangerous to children and to pets. And some of our members have reported several hundred dollars worth of medical bills to repair cuts and bruises on their dogs.
Oh, wow. So what kind of glass did you bring for show and tell here?
Well, I brought a couple things, and one is surprisingly a glass beer bottle, but most people don't realize when they break, they get very sharp. The bottoms and the tops get lodged on logs, and then they affect people's ability to walk safely around Sandy Beach.
May I see what you're describing?
Sure.
Carefully, I suppose. Yes. Okay.
The first piece
is like a frosted glass bottle of a... Is this a beer bottle?
It looks to me like a wine bottle, or it could be some other kind of a food item for the family. But it's very sharp, as you can see. She was asking me to hand it to her carefully. It's got points on it, and if it got lodged in a log or something like that, somebody could easily cut their foot and not realize it. And we don't want that to happen to anybody in Juneau.
Second piece is
part of a beer bottle.
Oh, yeah, I see just the top is broken off, making it a very nice and stabby.
Yeah, and you don't think about it when you're enjoying beer with your friends, but if they drop one accidentally, easy to break, easy to get glass. And even the little pieces on the top, we call them shards, that they could cut somebody's foot, a child's foot or a dog's foot very, very easily.
Yep, that looks pretty scary.
The last piece I brought it because it has some barnacles on it. So it tells you it's been at the bottom of the ocean for a while.
Yeah, I see that. This is nice and seasoned by the sea. It's got barnacles all over it, but it still has some very sharp edges.
Right, and that's generally what we find is sharp edges. We don't find the real smooth glass that you'll see in glass beach books. We haven't found that.
Well, what's kind of scary about this one is that if it was just kind of sticking up out of the sand and all you could see is the barnacles, you wouldn't know it was glass. You wouldn't be able to see these sharp, pointy edges.
Right.
So that's definitely a problem. How much glass do you end up picking up every year?
We've been doing this for over 10 years, and we have collected over 100 pounds of glass
off of it.
And some of them, people think, well, they're very small. So 100 pounds of glass is a lot of little small pieces, and every little bit helps, because just think, it's avoiding a dog, a child, or a young person running on it and getting hurt. And we will be doing this rain or shine.
Yeah, and these pieces that you brought in, they're not small at all. They're actually quite large. So I can imagine even smaller pieces are even harder to see and even easier to step on.
Right.
All right. So when volunteers show up, what are they going to be armed with to pick up the glass?
Okay. No one has to bring any special equipment. We will provide everything. Please, if it's rainy, bring your normal walking rain gear in Juneau, and we'll provide you with either a bucket or a plastic bag so that you can go pick up glass safely and bring it back to the recycle bins.
And when and where is this cleanup, one more time?
Okay. It's this Sunday, May 27th, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. It's at Sandy Beach. Meet us there at the parking lot. And we're real obvious. You'll see us with buckets and all that. And if you can only come for part of the time, 10, 15 minutes, please come for 10 or 15 minutes. We'd love to have you. And you're really helping the community. I also wanted to mention one other thing Grateful Dogs does is we are continually doing a pet food drive for needy pets in Juneau. And a lot of people don't know about that. And you can drop off your pet food at Southeast Alaska Vet Clinic. And we take cat food, dog food, gerbil food, whatever people want to donate.
That's fantastic. Any other events or anything else that the organization is promoting?
We will be helping out with glass and site cleanup for the 4th of July. So if anybody wants to meet us at the 3rd of July at Sandy Beach, we'll clean Sandy Beach up for the 4th of July fireworks.
Deborah, what's the best way to find out more information about Grateful Dogs?
Grateful Dogs has a website, and it's www.gratefuldogsofjuneau.org. And also we have, they certainly can contact our president, George Utermole, at 586-3849.
Excellent. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, but welcome everybody to the glass pickup. And also, please, if you have pet food, even open bags of pet food, like your dog tries it once, doesn't like it, we will take those and rebag them for the food bank. And all donations go to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank.
Deborah, thanks so much for doing what you do. Deborah Bear here from Grateful Dogs of Juneau. The pickup is this Sunday, Memorial Day, May 27th. What time does it start again?
10.
10 a.m. at Sandy Beach.
Good.
Sky, but it don't mean nothing to me. The station is supported by Breezin, carrying a variety of sandwiches, fresh baked bread and pastries. Chef Moorhead offers daily changing menu choices for takeout and catering for special events and parties. More information at Breezin.com.
Hi, my name is Joe Davis Fleming, and I am the executive director for the Juno Symphony. Join us on May 25th at 6 p.m. at Elizabeth Peratrovich Hall for Shaken, Not Stirred, an evening with live music, a silent and outcry auction, delicious food, and, of course, cocktails, Shaken, Not Stirred. All proceeds benefit the Juno Symphony. Get your tickets at the Jack Hartside Books or online at junosymphony.org.
We've got a little bit of, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO Juno 104.3. I'm Shelley Delaney, your Wednesday host. We've got a little bit of extra time on the show today, so I'd like to present you with a mudroom story from just this past February. Here's Bruce Wayrock.
Final speaker this evening is Bruce Wayrock. Bruce was raised in Lincoln, Nebraska, and he worked as a Gandy dancer on the Burlington Northern Railroad. You don't get to say that very much. He worked there for 3 years before he moved to Sitka, where there's no railroad, and where he helped build a salmon hatchery at Sheldon Jackson College. Bruce is married to Luann. They have 3 kids and live at Ock Bay. Bruce?
Wally Butler was a normal 16-year-old kid. His brother Larry grew up in Waterloo, Iowa. And in Pearl Harbor Day in 1944, he wanted to do nothing more than join the Army and fight in the war. But Larry had to wait until he was 18 when he graduated from college and immediately did what he wanted to do. He joined the Army, and he wanted to fight World War II. So Larry thought what he wanted to do was be a medic and help others. So he got his training in the United States. He went from post to post around the United States to get his training. And finally, at 19, he landed on Omaha Beach on the with the 109th Evacuation Hospital. And as they made their way across France towards Germany to the south of Belgium in 1944, December, all of a sudden, Germans and Hitler decided to march a counteroffensive. It was the Battle of the Bulge. And the 109th Evac Hospital was to the south of Belgium, and the Germans pushed hard. And the 109th Evacuation Hospital was using a farmhouse for their field headquarters, along with the field command for marshaling the troops in that area. And they became apparent that they would be the tip of the bulge. They would be the edge of the bulge, and they would have to evacuate the hospital. And they would have to retreat while the Germans advanced. But Larry, as part of the 109th Evac, was dealing with the terrible carnage and the massive wounds caused by the terrible weapons of World War II. You can't imagine what a bullet or a piece of hot shrapnel can do to flesh. So as a private in the 109th Evac, he was tasked with dealing with these wounded, maimed men in this evacuation hospital in this farmhouse. But it became apparent that everyone would have to retreat, and the Germans would have to take over the farmhouse and capture these Germans, because the command leadership at the time believed if we leave the wounded behind, they'll get better care, and they possibly will die because of their massive trauma and wounds. They'll be moved back west, and that... They just couldn't have that. They would rather have them face their fate with the Germans rather than the certainty of death. So Larry said, let's move these men upstairs above this farmhouse. And the farmhouse was no bigger than this area. And so what happened is these men slowly moved these wounded upstairs to the attic of this farmhouse. And they were preparing to leave Larry behind with all these wounded men. And he said, wait, let's make it look like this has been shelled, because there were bomb fragments, there were craters around the farmhouse, and there was trash everywhere. So what they did is they made garbage and trash and beams and wood on the stairs going up to the attic where Larry and these men were, and they made it look like it was destroyed upstairs. Meanwhile, Larry's upstairs with these men, and he takes off his boots. This is in December of 1944. He puts tape and cotton on the legs of these cots. He tapes the men's mouths shut, who are moaning, and he takes a lot of capsules of morphine to keep these men quiet. And so the U.S. leaves, the U.S. troops leave, the command headquarters leaves, and he's upstairs with these wounded men. It's dawn, and outside he can hear German voices. Then there's a kick at the door, and the Germans occupy the lower part of this farmhouse. The Germans now are using this farmhouse as their field headquarters when he's upstairs. And for a day and a half, Larry has got to tend to these men and keep them quiet. He's got to keep them on morphine so they can't moan and they can't groan. He's got to deal with their bodily functions and clean up with them. He's got to keep his own body quiet. He's got to move with the stealth of a mouse. The murmuring of voices, the crackle of German voices on the radio, the shooting outside the door, and finally, he hears the Germans leave, because the United States, under General Patton, is moving south and is pushing the bulge back. Then the Germans left. And Larry's upstairs, it becomes quiet. But all of a sudden, he hears U.S. voices. He hears American voices. And the Americans retake the farmhouse. They pull the materials from the stairs. He shouts. And every single one of those men then is evacuated back to the field hospital, further back into France, then to Britain and the United States. And every single man in that attic died. And Larry Butler gets a field commission from General Patton for his work. Later, Larry returns to the United States, marries my mom, and 9 months after I'm born, he's killed by a drunk. But Larry was a neat guy, and I'm very grateful he was my dad.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. On tomorrow's show, Julie Copin's host. We'll get an update from UAS about the One Canoe Gathering. The Juno Symphony will preview Shaken, Not Stirred. We'll meet the Juno Douglas City Museum's new director and hear about summer programs. And, of course, you can plan your weekend with Arts Up, a summary of all the capital city's arts and entertainment opportunities. Scott Brown is the producer, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.